All right, tonight we are in Exodus chapter 2. Before we dive into the chapter, a couple of introductory notes just to set the tone for where we are. So, two lessons ago, we did an overview of Exodus, and in that overview of Exodus, we talked about four major themes that we will find in the book of Exodus. And the first of those four major themes that we talked about at that time was Moses as a type of Christ. And at that time, we actually went to Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15, where Moses prophesies that after him, there will come another prophet like him. In the short term, that was fulfilled in the person of Joshua. And then we made the point that Joshua is the Hebrew form of the Greek name Jesus, right? So God saves. But Moses as a type of Christ. And so as we dive in tonight to Exodus chapter 2, we will begin to see these parallels between Moses, the mediator of the nation Israel, and Jesus, the mediator of the new Israel, the church. All right, and so we'll begin to see that tonight in Exodus 2. And then just to remind you of the background into which Moses is born, the culture, the situation into which Moses is born. If we go to the end of Exodus chapter 1, which we discussed last time, we saw that Pharaoh was afraid because the Israelites, the nation of Israel, who was living in Goshen 400 years after the death of Joseph, they were becoming a large nation, and they remained a very sequestered nation. They were not intermingling with the Egyptians. And so they were becoming large and sequestered, having, in a sense, some sort of national identity. Of course, they're not established as a nation by God until later, Exodus chapter 20, but certainly having some identity. And so Pharaoh, if you remember back in Exodus chapter 1, verse 10, Pharaoh decides he's going to deal wisely with the Israelites, and so he places taskmasters over them, and he afflicts them with hard labor, verse 11. Verse 12, the more the Egyptians afflicted the Israelites, the more the Israelites multiplied, right? And so that the Egyptians were in dread of the sons of Israel. And so Pharaoh tells these midwives, these Israelite midwives, to kill all of the Israelite baby boys who are born. Well, we saw that the Israelite midwives did not want to do that because they feared God more than they feared Pharaoh. And so Pharaoh confronts the Hebrew midwives. And then in verse 22, Pharaoh is so frustrated that these Israelites are growing in number and the male children are still being allowed to live. Verse 22, chapter 1 of Exodus, then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born to the Hebrews, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive. So this now sets up the situation into which Moses, the mediator of the nation Israel, is going to be born. All right. So there's already, as we head into Exodus chapter 2, this tension. All right. And so I just want us to feel that tension as we dive in to Exodus chapter 2. Verse 1. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. And his sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens walking alongside the Nile. And she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, and she brought it to her. Verse 6, when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying. and she had pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go ahead." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I shall give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses and said, "Because I drew him out of the water." All right, let's pause there. So the first thing we see in Exodus chapter 2 is that Moses is born into the tribe of Levi. All right, so this is very interesting, and for those of us who have some knowledge, working knowledge of the Old Testament, especially the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Bible written by Moses, there's some interesting things to note here. First thing we should note, if we just go back a couple of pages to Genesis 49, this great chapter of Jacob blessing and in some cases cursing his sons, what we should realize is that Levi at this time, okay, is not a favored tribe in Israel. So Genesis 49 verse 5, "Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly, because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." And so, if you remember the background of this curse that Jacob places on Simeon and Levi, goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 34 and the rape of Dinah, Jacob's daughter. Right? And Simeon and Levi, they concoct this plan whereby they're going to circumcise, if you remember, the men of Shechem. Right? And then while the men of Shechem were hurting, Simeon and Levi go in and they kill all these guys in Shechem. And so Jacob remembers that as he's blessing, and in this particular case, cursing his sons. And so Simeon and Levi get cursed. So Levi, as we head into Exodus chapter 2, the first thing we have to realize is that Levi at this time is not a favored tribe. Now, some things will happen over the course of the rest of the Pentateuch. All right. So there will be in the book of Numbers two very important events in the life of the tribe of Levi. The first thing that will happen in the book of Numbers, and we don't have to go there now, but just sort of setting this whole thing up, is that Levi will be used by God as a redemption for all the firstborn of Israel. And this has to do with the 10th plague, which we will see later in Exodus, that sort of thing. But God will choose Levi based on the number of the men in the tribe of Levi to redeem the firstborn of Israel. All right? And he will name them to be his priests under the Mosaic covenant. All right? And so God uses the tribe of Levi to be his priests. And actually, if you remember back in Genesis 49, it says, "Their wrath, for it is cruel," verse 7, "I will disperse them in Jacob." And so at least in the case of Levi, they don't get any land in the land of Canaan, finally, when Joshua takes the Israelites into Canaan, right? But God is their inheritance, he says that. So that's the first thing that happens in the book of Numbers. The second thing that happens in the book of Numbers is you have the story of Phinehas, who is a descendant of the tribe of Levi, specifically the man Moses. He's a descendant of Moses. And his zeal for the Lord, you can see this, if my memory serves me correctly, in Numbers chapter 25. So Phinehas, coming from the tribe of Levi, is blessed. And so Levi, in a sense, is redeemed by God, but at this time when Moses is born, Levi is not among those with favored status. So that's the first interesting thing that we see. The second thing we see is this, as I mentioned, this background or situation into which Moses is born. And the situation, as we mentioned, is this idea that there's this slaughter of babies that is ordered by the king. Slaughtering of babies as ordered by the king. Does that ring a bell? What's the bell?
Herod,
that's right. Matthew chapter 2, so do me a favor. Matthew chapter 2, and so we see that the first parallel between Moses and Jesus actually appears in their respective birth narratives. And if you go to Matthew chapter 2, sometimes beginning at verse 16, the heading of this paragraph, sometimes it says the slaughter of the innocents or the murder of the innocents. My particular Bible says Herod slaughters babies, right? And we don't have to go through the whole thing, okay? But just in verse 16, then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, who had come to pay homage to this baby born in Bethlehem, and you can see that in the earlier portions of chapter 2. They worshipped him, verse 11. They opened their treasures. They presented him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, right? But being warned in a dream, verse 12, by God not to return to Herod, they departed for their own country by another way. All right. When they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph. Take your son, your family to Egypt. Get away from Herod. Now Herod, verse 16, he sees he's been tricked by the Magi. He's very enraged, and he sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in all of its environs from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he ascertained from the Magi. So you have this king who is enraged, who orders the slaughtering of Israelite babies. All right? And Matthew is the gospel to the Hebrews. And so much of what we will see in the parallels between Moses and Jesus will come from the gospel of Matthew. All right? And so this is the first place we see this parallel here between Moses and Jesus and the king enraged and ordering the slaughter of Israelite babies. So the mother, very shrewd here, verse 3, she hides Moses as long as she can. And she, in faith, when she can hide him no longer, puts him in a basket, a floatable basket, some might say an ark, right, and sends him down the Nile and sends his older sister, Miriam, to watch and see what happens to the basket. And of course, the daughter of Pharaoh, verse 5, comes down to bathe. She sees the basket. She sends her maidens to go and get it. She opens it. Moses is crying. She has pity on him. She realizes, now, this is Pharaoh's daughter, she realizes it's a Hebrew child, and she ignores, in the providence of God, she ignores the edict that had been given by her father back in Exodus 1, verse 22. And so already we see God protecting Moses, who had been marked out from the foundation of the world to be the mediator of his people Israel. In the very same way, God comes to Joseph. He first comes to the Magi in a dream and says, get away from Herod. Don't go back through Herod. He comes to Joseph in a dream, and he ordains the means by which the mediator of the new Israel, the church, escapes the slaughter of the innocents. Right? So we see God in his providence preserving the lives of his mediators. His sister Miriam then calls to Pharaoh's daughter, verse 7, and says, shall I go call a nurse for you? I don't know, maybe perhaps I might be able to find a woman who can, you know, nurse this child, right? And of course, Pharaoh's daughter says, yeah, sure, right? I mean, better you than me. And verse 9, Pharaoh's daughter says to Moses' mother, after Miriam goes and finds her mother, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I shall give you your wages. And what we'll call this is an ironic provision, right? So Moses' mother is paid to nurse her own child by the Egyptian king's family, right? This ironic provision that God provides. So child grows, she weans him, eventually brings him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he, Moses, becomes her son. She names him Moses and says, because I drew him out of the water. So the Hebrew word for draw out is Moshe, right? And so it's the, there's actually a lot of discussion about the etymology of the name Moses. Is it an Egyptian name? Is it a Hebrew name? And the answer is probably yes. It's probably an Egyptianized form of the Hebrew word for draw out. Okay? And so, I mean, the Israelites have been around a long time, right? They've been around 400 years. The skeptics, you know, the liberals, the theologians who hate the one true God, right? They're saying, well, how could Pharaoh's daughter have known? Blah, blah, blah. Well, look, I mean, the Hebrews have been living here a long time, right? Yes, they've been sequestered, but I'm sure that the, especially the educated people in Pharaoh's household know something about these Hebrew people, right? And so not hard to believe that Pharaoh's daughter probably has some handle on the Hebrew language. So not that big of a deal. Don't pay too much attention to the skeptics. All right, verse 11. Now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up that he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he, Moses, looked this way and that. And when he saw that there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And he went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, why are you striking your companion? Verse 14. But he said, that is, the offender said, who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and said, surely the matter has become known. Verse 15, when Pharaoh heard of this matter, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. All right, a few things here in this particular paragraph, these five verses. So Moses now, he's grown up. We'll find out he's actually 40 years old-ish around this time. And he goes out. So he's a son in Pharaoh's household. But he goes out and he has apparently some recognition that he's not Egyptian. All right? He's an Egyptian by adoption, but not Egyptian by heredity. Right? And there's some either sense of that or some full knowledge of that. We don't have any idea how he comes by that, whether or not Pharaoh's daughter told him that or whatever. But he has some knowledge of who he is, at least by heredity. And so he's walking out and he, verse 11, looked on the hard labors that were overtaking his people. And he sees this Egyptian beating one of his brethren. And looks like Moses has a little bit of an anger problem here, which we will see again as we read the Pentateuch, okay? But this is it, the first manifestation of this tendency towards anger which Moses has, right? And so he looks this way and that, and he kills the Egyptian and hides him in the sand. The next day, it says, verse 13, he sees two Hebrews fighting. Now, it's very interesting here. And there's a verse that we'll turn to in a second that had puzzled me until just this past week. Okay, so let's compare and contrast how Moses deals with these two situations. With the Egyptian, Moses has no problem killing him. With his own people, Moses does not take that route. Instead, he reserves the interaction to a reprimand. Okay? So very different. Two successive days, very similar things happening. The difference is one's an Egyptian, the other one's a Hebrew, and Moses chooses to kill the Egyptian, the Gentile, and chooses only to reprimand his brother. Why? Why is that? All right. Turn with me to Acts 7. Acts 7. Acts 7 is the entire chapter is Stephen's defense before the Jewish council. And he basically goes all the way back to Abraham, and he recounts much of the history of the Israelites and God's redemptive plan leading up to the end of chapter 7, where he basically lets the Sanhedrin have it, calls them stiff-necked fools and all that good stuff, which ends up in him being killed. But in Acts 7, I want you to see verse 17. But as the time of the promise was approaching, which God had assured to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt, until there arose another king over Egypt who knew nothing about Joseph. That's Exodus chapter 1, verse 8. It was he who took shrewd advantage of our race and mistreated our fathers so that they would expose their infants and they would not survive, which we saw Exodus 1, verse 22. Verse 20. And it was at this time that Moses was born, and he was lovely in the sight of God, and he was nurtured 3 months in his father's home. And after he had been exposed, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and nurtured him as her own son. Verse 22, and Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. Verse 23, but when he was approaching the age of 40, it entered his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. Verse 25, and he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him. But they did not understand. Verse 26, and on the following day he appeared to them as they were fighting together, and he tried to reconcile them in peace, saying, men, you are brethren, why do you injure one another? Verse 27, and so on and so forth. The point here is that Stephen gives us some inspired commentary on why Moses treats the Egyptian unto death, but not his brothers. Verse 25, Moses supposed that his people would see in the killing of the Egyptian that God was now granting them deliverance through him. Okay? Moses was assuming that his people would remember the promises given to Abraham, Genesis 15, your people will be enslaved by another nation 400 years, but I will bring them out. And it turns out, verse 25, they did not understand at this time when Moses is 40 years old. They did not understand that this that Moses was their mediator and their liberator. Savior with a small s. And what is the manifestation of their lack of understanding that their deliverance was upon them and the time of the fulfillment of the promise was upon them? When Moses confronts the oppressor, the Hebrew, the next day, the Hebrew does not listen. Does not listen. Okay? And in fact, it causes a delay of their liberation out of Egypt for another 40 years. It will take another 40 years and 10 plagues for the Israelites and the Egyptians to finally be convinced that it's time for the Israelites to go. And this is all in the context of Stephen looking back on redemptive history and interpreting that situation for us. The Hebrews did not understand. And as we get to the end of Exodus 2, we will see what the difference is between the time when Moses is 40 and the time when Moses is 80. So let's continue on. Verse 16 in Exodus chapter 2. One additional thing before we pick up in verse 16. Verse 15, Pharaoh heard of this matter, i.e. that Moses, his adopted son or grandson, had killed an Egyptian, and so he tries to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Sat down by a well. Do you have any recollection of another man who sat down by a well?
Jesus.
Okay, so if we look forward to redemptive history, yes, we have Jesus sitting down by a well in John chapter 4. But we have also previously seen Genesis 29, Jacob sat down by a well. All right, so again, we see this thread. Jacob is Israel. Moses sits down by a well. Jesus is Israel and Moses. All right? Verse 16. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. Then the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. When they came to Reuel, their father, he said, "Why have you come back so soon today?" So they said, "An Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and what is more, he even drew the water for us and watered the flock." And he said to his daughters, "Where is he then? Why is it that you have left the man behind? Invite him to have something to eat." And Moses was willing to dwell with the man, and he gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses. Then she gave birth to a son, and he named him Gershom, for he said, "I have been a sojourner in a foreign land." Now it came about in the course of those many days that the king of Egypt died, and the sons of Israel sighed because of the bondage, and they cried out, and their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. Verse 24, so God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them. Okay, so Moses is expelled from Egypt because Pharaoh's trying to kill him. He sits down by this well. The daughters of Reuel, the priest of Midian, come to water their flocks. And Moses, of course, helps them by chasing off the male shepherds who are coming to give the women a hard time. Moses ends up in the house of Reuel, right? And ends up with a Midianite wife. Her name is Zipporah, which you can see in verse 21. And Moses has his first son, verse 22, named Gershom. And Gershom means literally stranger. All right. So Moses is in a new country. This is certainly not the country he grew up in, spent the first 40 years of his life, which was Egypt, which also, ironically, he wasn't even an Egyptian. He's an Israelite. So he's twice removed now from his people. right? Living in the land of Midian. Now, verse 23, 24, 25, very important. Now, it came about in the course of those many days. Those many days here is a euphemism for 40 years. Okay? That king of Egypt died. And now, look at the contrast. Verse 23. The sons of Israel sighed because of the bondage, and they cried out. Now, that is distinctly in contrast to what we saw over in verses 13 and 14, which we saw in Acts 7:25. Moses is 40 years old, and his brethren, the Israelites, do not realize that he is their mediator, liberator, savior, small s. 40 more years have passed, and 40 is obviously a very important number in the life of Moses and in the life of the Israelites. Okay? And 40 years now have passed, and all of a sudden, something has happened in the minds and hearts, and perhaps even in the bodies of the Israelites who have been suffering under the bondage and the beatings of the Egyptian taskmasters. They have finally come to the point, by sovereign grace and providence, where they are ready to be liberated. They are ready to be liberated. It took 40 more years. And it says in verse 23, their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. So God sends Moses to liberate them. They don't recognize him. When they finally desire to be free of their bondage, they cry out. And how does God respond? Look at verses 24 and 25. I want you to see four things here. God does four things. Very important four things. God heard, number one, he heard their groaning. Number two, God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Number three, God saw the sons of Israel. And number four, God took notice of them. Literally, it means God knew them. God knew them. He recognizes them in an intimate way as the heirs of the promises of the covenant that he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So he hears their cry. He remembers his covenant. He sees them with his eyes. And he knows them intimately. And now the wheels of salvation will begin to turn. Very, very important. A couple of things. I have heard bad pastors and bad teachers say that God always hears the cries of his people. It's not true. Okay? If you have any familiarity whatsoever with the prophets, you will find there are times in the lives of the Israelites where God refuses to hear the cries of his stubborn, obstinate, unbelieving, old covenant people. So don't be surprised by that if you're reading through the prophets. But, as a word of encouragement, it is true that God always hears the cries of his covenant-keeping, believing people. He hears, he remembers his covenant. In our particular case, on this side of the cross, the blood of the new covenant, which has purchased us, He remembers that covenant. He sees us, right? And he knows us. So we are never outside. If we are in the new covenant by faith in the finished work of Jesus Christ, God always hears and remembers and sees and knows us. Right? So just be encouraged by that, no matter where you are, no matter what you're going through. All right? So that's one. Two, as we wrap up, turn with me, please, to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, right before James. Hebrews 11. We'll pick up in verse 23, since we're talking about Moses. Hebrews 11, verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, or the fleeting pleasures of sin, perhaps yours reads. Verse 26, considering the reproach of Christ, greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, verse 27, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. And so in verse 23, we have the faith of Moses' parents hiding Moses, sending Moses in a basket down the Nile, entrusting him to the sovereign grace and providence of God. Verse 24, Moses goes out to see his brethren. Okay, to see his brethren, choosing to endure ill treatment rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin, that is, living in the household of Pharaoh, because 26, he considered the reproach of Christ. I mean, think about that. Just think about Moses. There's a sense in which the writer to the Hebrews, the preacher to the Hebrews, he knows that Moses, by going out to his own people, he sees Christ. And later in Hebrews chapter 13, we will be exhorted to also do the same thing, to go outside the city walls where Christ was sent, to bear his reproach with him. This was exactly what Moses did when he leaves the household of Pharaoh. For he was looking to the reward, and by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. And so it's actually interesting. In Exodus 2, Pharaoh's trying to kill Moses. Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. And so there's lots of discussion to be had about what verse 27 means, that Moses did not fear the king, and yet he fled and went to Midian. Okay, so it's very interesting there there's a sense in which sometimes running away, right, is not a manifestation of fear, right? But we see Moses acts in faith to leave Pharaoh's household and ultimately be exiled, right? And the preacher to the Hebrews, as I said in Hebrews 13, will call us to the same, right? Sometimes it's not fear to flee, right? Sometimes even the reformers would hide, right? All the while trusting in God and his providence and acting by faith.